For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westerveld. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for March 14th, 2007. In this edition, we'll talk with Michael Sutton about bolstering software development using fuzzy tools. In addition, we'll have the week's news, including dozens of flaws patched by Apple, GoDaddy investigating a denial-of-service attack, and a long-time attack method that can be used with Windows Vista. Apple issued a security update Tuesday, plugging 45 flaws found in Mac OS X. The update affects Mac OS X version 10.4.8 and earlier. Several flaws could be exploited by an attacker to conduct a denial-of-service attack or elevate privileges to access data, according to a security alert issued Tuesday by Apple. Other flaws could allow an attacker to gain full control over a victim's computer. Security vendor Symantec said it was unaware of any exploits in the wild. The Apple update also fixes some third-party applications, such as Adobe Systems' Flash Player and the MySQL database. In other news, the daylight savings time change in the United States came off with relatively few problems. Daylight savings time was extended by 4 weeks, changing the dates of the actual start of the hourly spring ahead in the United States to Sunday, March 11th. Some IT administrators worked overtime on Sunday and Monday to address issues. Those IT administrators told Search Security that they had to troubleshoot some minor issues. Some problems existed within Microsoft Outlook. Some calendar appointments were off by an hour, according to a report by the SANS Internet Storm Center. So far, there were no reports of issues to forensic and auditing security tools. Next, my interview with Michael Sutton of Spy Dynamics, but first, this message.
So you're looking for good reference books on information security, but it's so painful trying to figure out which ones are worth reading. And you're sick and tired of spending time on all those tedious e-com websites trying to sift through all of those anonymous user reviews, right? Well, here's a word of advice. Check out searchsecurity.com's information security bookshelf. SearchSecurity.com has compiled an impressive selection of reference book excerpts from leading information security experts, including Ira Winkler, Gary McGraw, Kevin Mitnick, Joel Dubin, and many more. And if you want more than an excerpt, you can download a full chapter for free. Check it out today at searchsecurity.com/bookshelf. That's searchsecurity.com/bookshelf.
And we're back. I met up with security researcher Michael Sutton at the Black Hat DC conference held earlier this month in Arlington, Virginia. Michael was a director for iDefense VeriSign, where he headed the iDefense labs. He currently works for Spy Dynamics. We're going to talk about a vulnerability discovery technique called fuzzing. Now, while fuzzing has been around since the late 1980s, Michael tells me it's only started to gain momentum in the last couple of years. It's a topic of an upcoming book he is co-authoring called Fuzzing Brute Force Vulnerability Discovery. Michael tells us why he thinks fuzzing tools should be worked into the daily routine of most software developers.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm hoping you can describe what you think are some of the big Web 2.0 threats facing developers today. I know Ajax, obviously, is one of them.
Yeah, I think that the first thing to keep in mind is that Web 2.0, first off, it's not very well defined. I mean, we think of it as just all these new technologies, Ajax, RSS, web services. So that's generally how we define it. Any of those technologies do not, in and of themselves, create new security vulnerabilities. It's the same old vulnerabilities that we're seeing because everything happens over the same transport mechanisms, HTTP. But what we're finding is that it changes the way we do things. It changes how inputs are passed back and forth. And so we have to approach security in a different way. We need new tools to be able to recognize and test these different technologies, but it's still the same old vulnerabilities that we're looking for. A second piece to that is that there's always a rush to have the latest and the greatest new technology, and Web 2.0 is the big buzzword, and I think the greatest security threat that it poses right now is simply the fact that everybody's rushing into it, and they're not keeping security in mind. And so I'm seeing a lot of these sites that have adopted these technologies, and it's very clear that security was a complete afterthought, if it was a thought at all, because they're just chock full of holes. And so that, I think, is the greatest risk, is that we're just rushing into this without thinking about security.
Do most software developers know what fuzzing is?
I would say no.
Okay.
Fuzzing is certainly not a new concept. I mean, fuzzing has been around for a long time. I'm in the process of writing a book, so I was actually looking the stat up last night. The earliest mention of fuzzing that we were able to come up with was back in 1989. It was a professor from UW-Madison, I believe, and he sort of came up with the term because he was just doing some testing on applications. And so it's been around for a while, but it's primarily been specific to the security community. Developers have not really approached fuzzing or used fuzzing in the software development lifecycle. QA teams have not. And that's one message I really try to get out there, is we're at a point where security is everybody's problem. It's not just the security team. It's everyone from management to the QA team to the developers, and we have to ingrain that notion in everyone's minds. And fuzzing, I think, is a unique methodology in terms of security testing. There's no approach that is right. There is no silver bullet. But fuzzing lends itself to being used by a broader audience because it can be highly automated into a tool that a non-security expert can use. And that's why I promote the use of fuzzing beyond the security community.
Explain that. What do you mean?
Sure.
Who would be using that tool?
Sure. So, I mean, let me first define fuzzing a little bit. Like fuzzing is really simply trying to think of what the developer hasn't thought of. So you're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at an application or whatever the target is. So let's take a web form, for example. Now, it's a login form. So the user or the developer has designed this web form assuming that you're going to put in a username and password. Those are two strings, alphanumeric characters. But what might they not have thought of? Well, maybe they didn't think of you putting in integers. Maybe they didn't think you put in negative integers. Maybe they didn't think you'd put in a string that was over 20 characters. So you're trying to think of things that the developer might not have thought of and might not have implemented exception handling for, and you automate that process. So maybe you come up with a hard-coded string of values that you send. Maybe you have some sort of algorithm that dynamically creates the content, and you just keep throwing it at the application. And at the same time, you're monitoring that application to see what happens. Does it spit out an error message? Does it handle it gracefully? Does it just roll over and die? What happens? So that's what fuzzing is. So you can build tools to automate that process, and a web form is just one specific example. I mean, I could be fuzzing a server, I could be fuzzing a network protocol, a file format, just about anything that I want to. Anything that acts as input in some sense can be fuzzed. But I can build a tool to automate that process. And so I, as a developer, might not be a security expert. Once I see a crash, I might not have the skills to be able to say, is this an exploitable crash? But as a developer, I care about a crash regardless, whether or not it's a security issue or a functionality issue. But if we can build good tools that, you know, don't require, that are user-friendly, that are easy to use, and then I don't need a security expert to run that. I can bring the security expert in after the tools have been run if I need the person to make that evaluation of how far could I take this crash.
Okay.
But from a developer's perspective and a QA perspective, the fact that a crash has taken place or an error has been presented, that's of importance right there. And it's very realistic for them to be using those sorts of tools. I think the key is to make user-friendly tools that work well. But secondly, and this is where I'm not yet seeing this in the commercial segment, is don't create a security tool for someone who's not a security expert. So don't build a fuzzer or any security tool that's this separate tool. Build it into the environment that the person's already comfortable with. A developer works within an IDE, you know, Visual Studio. So build a plugin to Visual Studio. That way they're already comfortable with that environment. All they have to do is they can be testing as they're developing. They don't have to do this separate process that changes the way they do things. And I think if we can get to that level where we can make user-friendly security tools that work well in the existing environment that somebody's comfortable in, then we can move these tools beyond security experts to earlier phases within the software development lifecycle. And that's always the key. We want to find vulnerabilities as early as possible.
Aren't developers really much under a lot of stress as it is right now? And do you really expect them to have the time? And I know they're like, there's a lot of stress to get a project moving forward and get it out the door. And now you're asking them to do fuzzing.
Sure. Well, you bring up an important point there. So that's one reason why I think it's important that we don't create this totally separate step for our developers or our QA team. We do our best to make a part of their existing processes. But the stress piece, I think, is a key thing to look at, because any change to your development lifecycle is never going to be successful if you don't have buy-in from management. Changes like that, fundamental changes to the way that you do things, must come from the top. That stress that you speak of, that comes from your manager coming to you and saying, this product has to go out next Thursday, no matter what. I don't care what we find. I don't care if you have to stay up all night. Great. I mean, I understand the realities of business, and I realize that that's only going to change to a certain extent. But if that manager or that executive understands that the success of the company, the success of that software, hinges not just on meeting a deadline to get the software out the door, but getting software out the door that works as promised and is secure. And fortunately, we are finally starting to see that. I think Microsoft is a fantastic example of that phenomenon. They have really done a complete 180 since from where they were, say, 5 years ago. They recognized that a lack of security in their software was hurting their business. It wasn't having a successful product did not just rely on meeting a deadline. It relied on meeting a deadline and getting a secure product out the door. So it came from the top, and they told everybody that security was their responsibility. And until we see that change in mentality, that it's upper management that's driving security being embedded in the software development lifecycle, we're not going to see more secure applications. So it's always going to be stress to meet deadlines, but part of that stress should be this has to be a secure product, not just it has to get out the door on time.
Side topic here, what do you think of market consolidation as it is right now? You spoke of Microsoft, and we're seeing a lot of security vendors being gobbled up by large vendors out there. What's your take on that? Is that...
Well, I see it from a couple of different perspectives. I see it from the perspective of the companies being acquired and the companies doing the acquisition. So as far as security companies being acquired, I mean, I view that as positive validation of the market. You know, we're in a society that fortunately the ideas and the new things come from the startups, the small guys who are willing to take the risks. And it's not until bigger companies see that they're successful in their ideas that they get acquired. So the fact that security companies are being bought and consolidated is a positive thing. It means that the security market is maturing. On the flip side, I see companies that are gobbling up other companies, like Google gobbles up all these companies all the time, and they need to take great care in the security there, because you're buying a company that may have a totally different way of developing software. Security may not be embedded into their life cycle. And so you need to, when you do that, when you acquire a company that's developing software, you need to sit down and make sure that they are following the same development processes and that they are doing the same security security controls that you require in your entity, because that's where I tend to see problems. Like Google's a great example. Google is very strong when it comes to security. But if you look at some of the problems that they've had from a security perspective, it's often from those companies that they've acquired, and you can tell that they have not, you know, yet gotten those new acquisitions up to their own security standards.
Back to fuzzing for a little bit more. If I'm a proactive developer, are there any fuzzing tools out there that I can get my hands on?
Yeah, you bet.
You recommend?
As far as fuzzing goes, it completely depends on the target. There's a concept of fuzzing frameworks, and that's sort of a new idea where you have a framework and you can build any fuzzer for any different target. But that's honestly still a fairly new concept. For the most part, what we see is specific fuzzing tools designed for specific targets. So it depends what you're developing, but there are many, many out there. I mean, if you're fuzzing network protocols, Spike is a tool that's been around for a number of years, but it's still a very successful tool. If you're building an application that's doing file formats or interpreting file formats, there's some new, I wrote one called File Fuzz a while back. We're just starting to see commercial entities emerge in that space. My company, Spy Dynamics, has fuzzing functionality built into their web application tools. For the most part, though, a lot of the fuzzing type stuff is still open source. We're just moving into the commercial realm. In the last, I would say, 2 years, I've actually seen fuzzing-specific companies emerge. Codenomicon would be an example of one. Beyond Security would be another, and Mu Security would be a third. So that's another validation that fuzzing is starting to mature for me, because I'm seeing companies say, hey, we can actually create a business model around this.
What do you have a title yet for your book? And
can
you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. So the book, I wrote it with two co-authors, Pedro Mamini and Adam Green, and God willing, it will be out this summer, although I noticed yesterday that it shows up on Amazon, so it's definitely close to becoming a reality.
Oh, that's good.
It's not available for order, but they're apparently taking pre-orders. But anyway, the title is Fuzzing Brute Force Vulnerability Discovery, and so hopefully that'll be out shortly. And I know of a couple of other books that are in the works as well, so I think this year you're going to see two or three books on fuzzing. So again, yet another validator that it's a technology that's starting to mature.
And finally this week, the GoDaddy Group, which runs GoDaddy.com, is investigating an attack that knocked out a number of websites on Sunday. GoDaddy is the world's largest domain registrars and web hosting providers. Neil Warner, GoDaddy's chief information security officer, told Search Security that the attack caused sites to go down intermittently. He said it's still too soon to tell who launched it and what their motivation was. Warner said his 12-person IT team looked through the logs to see which IP addresses the attack was coming from. It became immediately clear a bunch of IP addresses were trying to bog down GoDaddy. Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. You can check out our previous audio downloads at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. Have a great day.